Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, we're going to dive back into the depth of sororitas by focusing mostly on their organization, like units, and some of the key stories. So before we begin, as always, please like and subscribe to the cast. Your comments.
Follow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like and follow. They really are helping us grow the audience. We're actually reaching now people in countries and regions we never expected. For those of you who've already done so, a very big and hearty thank you. We also, at the same time, want to encourage as many of you as would like to join our Discord. We made this Discord as a place for people who love 40K to come and interact. And it's grown to be a lot more. It's actually transforming now into kind of a community where people are sharing thoughts, advice on games, like questions, everything about Warhammer, literature, video games, painting, hobbying, even just, you know, random like fan theories. And it's really
Those are some of my favorites, by the way.
Because some of them are actually really good. There's a guy that dropped one the other day on Tyranids. So I was like, yeah, that actually makes sense. And recently, Kevin, I'm not going to give your last name out of courtesy to you, joined our team and has taken over the Discord.
And it's lucky it's John, because I would have accidentally given out that, your home address.
Home address, like the name of your children. Yeah, Brad's not helpful. But anyway, Kevin's come in and actually redone our Discord. So our Discord used to be something I made, which... And I don't really understand technology that well. So it functioned. But anyway, now that Kevin's here, we've got sub channels, massive channels. I think we're at time of recording close to 3,000 people inside of it. So if you really like Warhammer 40K and you want to interact with people who have and ask questions and kind of really dive into it, I encourage you to join the Discord, because it's also a very healthy place. It's well monitored. We're seeing a lot, you know, people ask very noob questions and
Getting real answers.
Not oh my yelled God. At being a noob.
This makes me, that is the thing that makes me the happiest about a Discord, is you can ask the noob question and not feel like you throw up the question and immediately have to duck and cover.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not Reddit.
I hate that. Yeah, also, people need to pile on you more. This is making me sad. You've got so much stuff wrong. I mean, I get everything. Everybody expects me to get things wrong.
Yeah.
But you threw a couple softballs up there and people were just nice to you.
Yeah.
And it infuriated me.
Because I admit my mistakes. Also, whenever we pump the Discord, I do want to point out it is free and we make no money off of it. We made this because of what Brad and I just talked about. As I got into 40K, the options were Daka Daka Forum and Reddit. And those were two.
Welcome to getting flamed.
Yeah, just nightmare zones. So anyway, long story short, join our Discord, and thanks, Kevin. That too. Also, we have a Patreon for those of you who want to help us out. These are all in the show notes. If you like our cast and you kind of enjoy what we're doing, you want to help us continue to improve it, we made a Patreon. Thanks to the Patreon members who've already joined. We've been able to get new audio equipment. We've upgraded our audio editing software. We've actually hired an audio engineer to remaster. He actually already went through and remastered all of our back catalog. So if you want to go back and listen to one of our earlier stuff, and you listen to it like 6-7 months ago, it's better now. And I'm saying that with pure embarrassment at how bad it was. So for you guys who've been contributing, thank you so much. We do have more stuff. We do want to upgrade this equipment a little bit further, kind of improve the audio quality.
Website.
Yeah, there's only so much I can do to remove my stutter and Brad eating the microphone, but we'll see.
I get excited.
Yeah. Additionally, we now have a website. We had it before and it was an embarrassment it was one of the worst websites on the internet. Now that I've looked at it, I made it so I can say that, but if you go to the 40klorecast.com,
we definitely think that pink on purple wasn't our best idea.
I made that thing in a morning and I was very proud of myself that I made a website in 2 hours, and I looked back on it and went, wow, it looks like I did it in 10 minutes. So anyway, if you go to our new website, 40klorecast.com, we actually have the link to said Discord, said Patreon, and actually merchandise now. We have some clothing options that are coming out, more by the day.
I'm so excited about this, by the way. This is the thing that I'm most excited about, because we have Bad Dad Emperor.
Yeah.
We've got the fact that I apparently do not know the difference between literally and figuratively.
Yeah, you say it constantly.
It's my most used.
Yeah.
And
the Space Marines being poisoned. We have some of our logos. And we're going to keep adding to this.
Maybe I block that out of my mind.
Yeah. Oh, there's also the 40K Lore Cats. For those who don't get that reference, by the way, Brad, when he was promoting our show early on, would say it so quickly that people thought it was the 40K Lore Cats,
yep,
not the Lore Cast. So I made that. We're actually adding more stuff because in our Discord, people are telling us, well, you should also make this t-shirt. And some of them are wonderful ideas. So that's happening. The last one we always have to cover is Brad. So Brad coaches 40K, and he's been coaching 40K for over a decade now.
I've been coaching for off and on for a decade.
Yeah.
Seriously, for the last, only thing I do for 5 years.
Yeah. So if you're looking for experience with it, Brad does this. He's got experience playing every faction, playing against every faction, with the exception of Imperial Agents, as we've discovered recently. Sorry, it's my new army. And Brad just went, this army makes no sense. And I went, yeah, it's stupid. But anyway,
shouldn't exist.
For those of you who are looking to play the game, who like the game and want to get more into the game, Brad's available for coaching. He can teach you anything from the most basic level of the game all the way up to actually pretty elite high levels of play. So I really encourage people who are looking for something, you can go to it. We did remove him saying it on the cast, and we keep getting requests now. So you can go to our website, 40klorecast.com. It's an actual page for Brad coaching, or
the Discord. No, the Discord's easier, actually.
No, or
oldmanbrad40k@gmail.com.
Yeah, I want him to keep getting the spam. Anyway.
Yeah, that's why I stopped saying it.
That's great. I'm going to ruin that email address.
I'm going to have to get a new one from that.
So on to the cast. So let's dive back into the sisters. So let's start with the structure of the Adeptus Sororitas.
Well, there was one person that was in, just did all of this.
Yeah.
It's Sebastian.
Sebastian Thor. So yeah. Sebastian Thor takes over the ecclesiarchy after Goj Vandermeer.
He was trash. That guy couldn't have died a bad. The only reason that his death wasn't satisfying is he only died once.
Yeah. Oh, Thor should have been penned and engined, which we'll get to in a little bit. So with the reformation of the ecclesiarchy, Sebastian Thor, he shifted the sisters around. So they went from being originally the personal bodyguard to the leader of the church, which is what they were, to actually being the military arm for the Ordo Hereticus. And the Ordo Hereticus, for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, it's the Inquisition. So the Inquisition has multiple branches.
What's there?
Yeah, and this is one of the rougher ones.
Well, it's the one that the average person has to worry about.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, if you're Ordo Malleus or Ordo Xenos, then if you're human, it's kind of...
You're just like, yeah, I've never even seen these guys, and then
You're going to see them really quickly, and then you're going to stop existing.
Hereticus shows up, and they go, I didn't like the way you ate that donut. Looked very chaos.
Yeah. Were you savoring?
Yeah. No, we don't do that. Yeah,
we don't savor. Slaanesh savors.
Yeah.
I will say I actually like this move for the Sororitas because they're incredibly fanatical in their love and worship of the Emperor. Okay. So
there's not enough modifiers you could put on that. They are sisters are the most fanatical, period, hands down. I don't care what anybody that thinks that one of their Marines or whatever is on a crusade. Sisters, wildly more.
The issue, though, for the Inquisition has been that the Inquisition are actually very small. You've got Inquisitors, you've got this stuff, but it's not a large organization. They don't have the ability to really wage war. Technically, they have the ability, thanks to Imperial Decree, to go and seize, even Space Marines.
I mean, they got a little thing hanging around their neck.
Yeah, but they still have to go do it. It's different going and mustering a force and
correcting force. True. I mean, they do grab stuff.
Yeah, because like if you're trying to, for example, if I'm an Inquisitor, and I'm saying, oh, we have to go deal with this system is heretical, right? I can go and get an Astra Militarum regiment and all of this, but there's a lot more process versus having something kind of like under your command.
You can just make a phone call to the sisters and go, hey, we're going here.
Yeah, and to be fair, a lot of the times- Ordo Hereticus tends to deal with pretty large things like an Ordo Xenos, they also do, but Ordo Malleus doesn't. Ordo Malleus is usually wiping out a demonic incursion somewhere.
They also do small scales most of the time.
Yeah,
they're actually, if they're successful, they are always small scale because they're trying to wipe things out
before it gets started. Exactly. Yeah. Ordo Xenos moves around a little bit, obviously. But to be fair, Ordo Xenos is actually more likely going to involve other Ordos when it gets really bad. Like they can't single-handed
works. They almost never go anywhere by themselves. Yeah. But that's actually how they're structured.
Yeah.
Is they just grab and go places.
Whereas Ordo Hereticus, I mean, Ordo Hereticus are primarily dealing, well, they're supposed to be. There's going to be some John rants this episode, just deal with it. Ordo Hereticus are doing a lot of stuff like planetary governors who've turned against the Emperor, planets that are in just full rebellion against the Imperium. They also do what annoys me is they also do chaos incursions, demonic incursions, and Xenos invasions.
My problem with the Hereticus is they are supposed to be a scalpel and they are often a hammer.
Yeah.
Because what could be handled by an assassin is oftentimes.
Yeah. And we're going to get, we'll get there in a little bit. Some of my complaints about the sisters. There's some, as we were writing the show notes for this, some things came to realization that were a bit of an issue. And we'll deal with that in a minute. But for now, let's just focus back on Ordo Hereticus. So the Ordo Hereticus really needed a powerful military force. They could just, we were saying earlier, could be deployed without bureaucracy. And the sisters are perfect. They just, large organization, large military, and they send them out. Now, I will say, I'm going to call this out now, as we go through this cast, I am going to try and use the term Adeptus Sororitas over and over again, not Battle Sisters.
I'm not at all.
And I'm doing this because technically, the military branch of or Adeptus Sororitas are the Battle Sisters. The rest of them.
True, but they were known forever as the Sisters of Battle.
Yeah.
So, that's how they got released, and they will always be the same. Also, I will never say Astra Militarum either.
Yeah, I'm only calling this out now because there are a lot of people out there who really like Sisters, and I don't want them thinking that Brad and I are just ignorant about it. We're drinking wine and doing a podcast, so I'm going to get some stuff wrong. So just want to call it out now. So for the record, I've gotten it right, and there's your pre-apology. Another key thing about the Sororitas that I like is that they become a watchful eye for the Ordo Hereticus, because we said in the last cast, they get deployed as doctors, nurses, educators, advisors, and more. Any of you who played Rogue Trader, the game on Steam, which I really do recommend, the Sister of Battle there, kind of, she exemplifies this a lot about her love of
the one of my favorite things about the Sisters, though, is they do all this, but also they're supposed to still have a level of combat awareness, even though.
That's why. And this is why I'm saying this is such a cool move on their part, because, you know, if you think about it, like the sister who's sitting there providing aid or like caring for the orphans can fight off a demonic invasion, not solo, but she's ready. So she's got her bolter with her.
Yeah. She's administering shots and, you know, she's giving flu shots.
Yeah.
And also, she might kung fu you.
Yeah. If problem arises, she'll do it. And so what this ends up meaning for the Ordo Hereticus is that you've got individual or small groups of sisters spread out throughout the entire galaxy. Well, I mean, they're just because they're, I mean, these are the most, they get the joy of the most loyal members of the Imperium.
I was about to say, this is a big thing for I know we're doing sisters, but this is such a win-win for the Inquisition.
Oh, it's this huge
for because them. You went, hey, I'm just going to drop off the most loyal people ever and go ahead and make sure things are.
And they're basically Inquisitor lights in the sense that, like, you know, like they would just snuff out heresy. If they see something, they're just going to remove it right there and save the Inquisition the trouble. There are probably millions of what would have been heretical incursions into the Imperium that don't happen because a single or small group of sisters
are because you talk shit in front of the librarian.
Yeah.
And then she ninjas. She came up with three throwing knives and a bolter and shot you and killed you. Yeah. You went, oh, we were going to commit some heresy and now we're not.
Yeah, we're not. Yeah. Everyone who went to commit heresy is currently attached to that wall.
Over there. Left of it. Also, where did she bring out all of those knives and the bolter inventory?
What I do find interesting about the sisters being everywhere for the Inquisition is I don't understand how large the sisters are.
They don't give a number, but also there's
the math here is
doesn't work.
Yeah. So the only number I found was at the end when Sebastian Thor reformed the Ecclesiarchy, there were a little over 10,000 of them.
Yeah. Okay, fine. But they're on almost every planet.
Yeah, not just every planet. They're also, I mean, if you're on a hive world, they're in each hive.
Yeah, it's a crazy, and they're in there in force. It's not like three girls are there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and so this is like, we're talking about, so they're on every planet. Then they're as advisors, medics, because it's not just one sister. They're there. The planetary governor has a sister nearby.
Well, it's a big thing.
All the nobles have a sister.
On the 40K board, the game, yeah, they have the different hospitallers, things of that nature. But there's entire orders in the lore that do this, that they're everywhere. I mean, they're UNing it up. Like, they're Red Crossing it.
I mean, I'm doing rough math here, but I'm pushing them into the, honestly, I'm thinking hundreds of millions.
I think there's a billion.
Yeah. And that's, which means they're pushing into Astra Militarum. Like, there's only,
they're just everywhere.
Yeah. There's less than a million space marines.
They organize when they come in force.
Is it 100,000 space marines? I think it's,
It's
a million. It's a million. It's a million space marines. So there are there's a minimum 1,000-to-1 ratio of sisters to space marines. And it's probably bigger than that because we're just talking about. So just to kind of help you guys follow the math here, there are well over a million planets.
There's a million worlds.
Over a million worlds. On those worlds, there's going to be numerous sisters on each of those worlds because the sisters have to be the planetary governor.
Even if you say there's 75% of the worlds, which is probably more.
Yeah.
75% of the worlds having a sister's.
I mean, dozens.
It's so much more.
It's more like hundreds of sisters per world, plus on ships. And then they've got their two bases. They've got a base on Terra and a base on Aphelia.
That doesn't include their,
effectively
their strike forces. And we'll talk about the orders. Each order has its own force.
Exactly. So there's an element where, like, I mean, again, this could just be classic GW math, where they're just like, oh, yeah, there's sisters everywhere. And you're like, well, doesn't that mean there's more of them? But yeah, effectively, the sisters wear the same power armor as a space marine, carry the same weapons as a space marine. They're much easier to train and make, apparently, because we've got...
They should be dominant. Come on, let's...
Why are we using space marines?
Let's for skip anything? This, yeah. Why are we not just going, hey, we only use sisters?
Yeah, it actually makes sense. You could wipe out, we'll get to that in a little... No, let's do it now. Brandon, we're talking about this at lunch. This drives me nuts about the sisters. So we're saying that there is basically as capable as a space marine.
You're going to make sisters fans sad right now.
I'm going to say this openly. I actually like sisters a lot. My drives me nuts is they're as capable as a space marine. They're easier to make than a space marine.
There's so many more.
And from a lore standpoint,
they do absolutely nothing.
Exactly. Like we've got, so you're telling me I've got a million space marines and I've got a billion sisters. And when the Tyranids or Chaos or the Tau or the Eldar do something, I don't just say, cool. Well, I'm gonna crap on Tau here. Don't take it the wrong way, guys. But if I were to take 100 million sisters and launch them into the Tau space.
Bad news, bears.
It's over, right? Tyranid Leviathan fleet is pressing down. Cool. How about on the left flank, we just put, again, 200 million sisters.
Wait for it, though. John... Would you say that's the east, west, north, or
south? Left? Left. That's what it is. It's the left side. Well, stage left or my left? Same. I don't care. But you could. You could literally take the sisters. If the math, and I know GW probably just made a mistake here, but if the math is correct, you could take the sisters, deploy them hard, and actually basically recenter the galaxy.
They just don't push fronts is my biggest thing. Because the guard, Imperial Guard, is the rock that you take something, they keep something. They totally maintain it, everything. The Marines are the poster boys. They go out and they conquer. They do things. And then sisters just kind of are in the stories. They got some cool-ass stories. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, they got great stories, but it's interesting. We were sitting at lunch talking about this, and I can't think of if you read the Sisters Codex, there's campaigns, there are things that they've done. Don't get me wrong, but it's not like a giant battalion of sisters was sent somewhere and like turned around an enemy.
No, it's like in the Indominus Crusade, they were just part of the crusade.
Right. In the 13th Black Crusade, they assisted in the defense of Cadia. But mathematically, they actually should have been able to turn that around.
100%. They should be pushing fronts. I would like to see that actually in the lore.
Me too.
Because I would like to see the sisters pushing fronts.
Yeah, this is more, this is actually just Brad and I complaining about GW writing because we're like, hey, this could be awesome. So. Yeah. Anyway, let's dive back into.
Creation of the Orders is pretty badass.
This is
we shit on them just a little bit because we thought they could be more.
Because they could be more. That's what I'm saying. This is where, like, that's why I want to do that little diatribe there. Because we're about to talk about how awesome the sisters are. Yeah. And I want to caveat with, they don't really use them correctly. So the orders are created by Alicia Domenica. Why her name is Latin, I have no idea. I don't care.
Also, super awesome because she is the sister that went in front of the Emperor. She's the one
who spoke to the Emperor.
And then put on her boots of mighty ass kicking.
Yep.
And went, oh, I've been lied to. Shit's about to go down. And then she went on after that, pretty much a full-on creation. I mean, she made with Sebastian, the sisters what they are right now.
And so she takes over and she actually splits the order up. She takes the order and she goes, half the order goes on Terra, and the other half the order goes to this planet called Ophelia 7.
It's Ophelia. That's all I know.
7. On Ophelia 7. I don't really feel like diving into Ophelia 7 too much, but long story short, in Ophelia 7, Ophelia 7 was one of the wealthiest planets in the entire galaxy.
To be fair, if you're going to choose a base of operation, choosing Naboo seems like a pretty good. They chose the most boss mode planet.
Oh, it's the wealthiest planet in the galaxy.
It's just,
and the Ecclesiarchy had a long hold there, so that's where they are. So
it's effectively a pleasure world without being a pleasure world.
Well, yeah. So this is funny because the sisters exist. Their headquarters are on Terra, the most important planet in the galaxy, and Ophelia, the most wealthy planet in the galaxy. Although I would actually argue Mars might actually be more wealthy.
Yeah, but nobody wants to go there. Yeah, it's weird.
Mildly irradiated. Yeah.
And also, everybody you meet there, you're like, oh, this is the most awkward thing I've ever done. I'm going to get out of here. Yeah.
And Ophelia 7 also is one of the main seats of the Ecclesiarchy, of course, because where else would it be? You know, and so anyway, so she does that. But the part that actually matters a lot more is she oversees the first order of the Adeptus Sororitas. What she does is she decides to split it up Gilliman style and say, all right.
She uses the Codex Astartes as a template.
Yeah. So now there is Ordos Militant, Ordos Hospitalier, Ordos Familius, Ordos Dialogus, and a bunch of the minor orders. This is done to kind of create the structure that we talked about last time. With the sisters, the idea is, to the diatribe we did earlier, the sisters are involved in everything Imperium.
It also, she knows that being involved in every level of Imperial life means that you have the most effect on people being loyal to the Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's said multiple times in why she does this, because it's not just the fighting. The fighting's the coolest. The fighting's on the board.
It's a part we play the game, but if you're not playing the game, this stuff's actually more interesting.
It's more important because you are in the day-to-day life. You also get to be like weird. It's not even sleeper agents. That's a bad term for it. But like,
yeah, I know what you mean though.
You're just the lady that does this. People will just accidentally.
Yeah. And we talked about the last
cast. Be less guarded.
The sisters are a weird one because like they're part of the Inquisition, which everyone in the Imperium is terrified of, but everyone likes them because their most interaction with the sisters is them
positive
for you. Yeah. So they're really, the sisters are really, I hope no one thinks that I'm actually shitting on sisters. I'm not. I actually really like them.
Let's go into the cooler part though. Let's talk about the first militant order.
Yeah. Well,
Eben Chalice, which also got jacked in the book. We're not even going to talk about that.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about how horrible this thing is. Yeah, womp womp. But anyway, so Alicia then personally founded the first of the orders militant. She founds the Eben Chalice. Some of the people that were with her, though, who met the Emperor, found other ones. We have Order of Martyred Lady, Argent Shroud.
What I do want to do for everybody watching that has played or is going to play the game, the Order of the Martyred Lady is the default sisters. They were the index. They have been the kind of go-to.
Yeah, which is interesting because the original one was Evan Chalice. Chalice is the first one.
Yep.
And GW does this a lot where they'll
flip who's the...
Yeah, who's the key one. I think it's usually, if I'm being honest, it's done by GW discovering which is the easiest one to paint.
That's true story.
To be fair, what they should do. Like the reason Ultramarines are the patron, not Imperial Fist, is because painting blue is actually a lot easier than painting yellow or black. Just calling it out.
We've got a couple good Argent Shroud. We've got the Fowler's Heart. Mm-hmm. So we have, which is all of them became saints, cough, cough.
Yeah.
Demons. But we'll get into that a little bit.
A little bit. From this structure, the Adeptus Sororitas start to push out into the galaxy. They're doing a very public military face style. And this is kind of interesting because, like, the Imperial Guard, the citizens are aware of them, of the Guard and the Navy, because almost every member of the Imperium has a direct or, like, one removed family member who serves in them, right? The sisters, don't forget,
you also see them.
Yeah, they are orphans. Every other part of the military that you're going to see usually is not a good thing. Like, you see a Grey Knight, you're dead.
Oh, bad news bears.
Yeah.
Unless Logan Grimnar shows up.
Yeah, Skitarii. Probably not a good thing.
It'd be nothing good happens.
Custode, not a good thing.
If a custode's on your planet, things are already terrible.
You don't realize how bad things are about to get.
Yeah.
Even space marines. Like, if you see a space marine, you might have survived is why you're seeing a space marine. There may have been, like, a Tyranid invasion, and the space marines came in, and you actually probably won't get murdered, maybe.
Depends on which chapter, but yeah. Continue.
But the sisters are routine. I mean, they're just wandering around.
Well, they're part of day-to-day life.
Yeah.
And the militant orders aren't part of day-to-day life, but sisters are part of day-to-day life.
Yeah. What's interesting about that, too, I was thinking, is, like, even with a guard, right? So we think about, everyone's aware of the guard, but as we said, when a regiment is formed, everyone leaves, and they never come back.
But they have planetary defense forces, which are technically Imperial Guard.
That's true. I was just more thinking, like, the sisters are going to be there for basically ever. Like I said, like if they're assigning a sister to the planet to be a planetary governor, I don't think they move them around that much.
No.
So you'd be...
Well, it depends on whether if you show up with a full militant wing, though, they will show up, fight, and leave.
That's a bad thing. Like, yeah, that's usually means your planets. If you see a militant wing of the sisters, it means your planet is in revolt against the emperor.
And you are probably getting...
collateraled in that one. Yeah.
You're about to see some pretty lights in the sky.
You're probably seeing them because of something you did.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? You did some shit.
Yeah. If you're seeing sisters of battle, they're probably facing you, not in a good way.
Yeah, you are getting bolters pointed at you. Yeah. By the way, best case scenario, the second thing is you're just getting virus bombed. So
yeah, that's, you're right. The sisters there, at least, you know, they're going to keep your house. So from that, we're going to take a weird left turn because I can't do anything else.
This is such a pet peeve for you, by the way.
I hate the Saints. All right.
In thought, they're amazing, though.
It's just, the writing's too disjointed. Anyway,
we'll be right back after a quick break. It's time to accept it. The holidays are upon us, and finding gifts for people is never easy or really fun. Luckily, we at the 40K Lorecast have a new sponsor, which will help you make your holiday shopping fast and easy. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go there and buy the game Fart Bingo? Yeah, I did. Is it for my child to play with his friends? We'll go with, yeah. At the same time, I was able to get a cocktail smoker. So yeah, those are probably all for me. Anyway, that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have uncommon, get it, collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items this holiday season. You'll find thousands of gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore, 40klore. That's uncommongoods.com/40klore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
What is a saint? So this is one of the strangest parts of the Adeptus Sororitas, I think. Actually, even the Imperium in general is saints. So I want to start off with, they are real.
Well, yes, but also let's talk about the fact that everything that a saint is what the emperor did not want in the beginning of the Crusades.
But he's doing it.
I know. That's my whole point, is everything he stood for in not being religious, not believing. They had so much faith, and the emperor is, at this point, a chaos entity. He is powered by, he's affecting the war.
He's a warp entity. He's not a chaos entity.
I know, he's not a chaos. Sorry. No. I know he's not. Sorry. He's not a chaos entity. I said that completely wrong. But however, he is powered by the Immaterium. He's fighting in the Immaterium against chaos, and he has actual power. But the thing is the sisters are giving him power because thought becomes reality in the Immaterium. And they are so powerful in their belief that they made things become true. This is my favorite part about the sisters, is they believe, they did orc style. Yeah, they believed so hard that it became a reality. They got superpowers because they said they were getting superpowers. The emperor protects me.
And I want to make it clear, people, these powers are real. This is not Monty Python Life of Brian Messiah stuff. This is real. These saints are real.
They're also powered by the warp. So.
Yeah, that's a side note. And so it's a sisters cast. I do want to say, for those of you who are newer to the game and don't know, saints are not only sisters. Sebastian Thor was made a saint. Lord Solar was made a saint. There was even a guardsman named Drusus who became a saint that's a long story for another day. But
It's a really cool story. He was basically Lazarus, so.
Yeah, but all my point is saints don't have to be sisters, but saints play a key part in the sisters.
Well, they're part of their biggest stories.
Yeah. And so what makes a saint even more confusing to me is kind of how you differentiate them from perpetuals. Because a saint primarily in the sisters in the battle is someone who died and then came back to life, which is what a perpetual is.
Yes.
But the sisters tend to not keep coming back.
Well, they're not perpetuals. They're, you know, who also keeps coming back? Demons.
Yeah.
Which is more what they do. They basically are powered by the warp. They reform in the warp and they come back in times of need. Again, the Immaterium. And this is the biggest thing, because chaos effectively corrupted the shit out of it.
Yeah.
The warp is thought. The warp is just a font of power. If you ever listen to our old ones, you're right.
The warp is not self-aware.
Right.
Things in the warp are.
Correct. But the warp isn't in itself bad. Being powered by the Immaterium isn't bad. Immaterium is just magic.
Yeah. So when we talk about saints, Brett, I actually disagree here. I actually don't think that they're demons. And the reason I'll explain it is because I think demons are things that have given their soul over, and their soul is controlled by something else. Whereas the living saints, they also, first off, they do eventually die, whereas demons don't die.
Demons do. Well, they don't die of old age. But
yeah. And I think when I look at the way sisters function, the sisters feel to me more like they're possessed than anything else. A demon.
I don't think they're possessed. I think they're infused. I think that's a better term.
Much better term. Much, much better term, actually. Yeah, they're infused with the energy of the emperor, which can make them immortal. But that energy can go away, is what I'm getting. Whereas the demons, they've made a deal, and their soul belongs to the emperor, and their soul belongs to a chaos gods. I do think they're different, but their functions not that different. And I'll explain. But let's talk into kind of like what a living saint is. So good example is Saint Alicia Domenica. So
badass girl at the beginning.
So she's leading the Sororitas in battle against a traitor rebellion, which is what the sisters are supposed to be doing with all their time diatribe. They also fight Xenos for no reason. But anyway, the planet goes into rebellion. Sisters get sent in and they just stamp out the heresy. They're perfect for this. But anyway, Alicia is fighting and they're massively overmatched by the traitors, just incredibly outnumbered. So she just goes to the front of the battle and gets shot in the face like 1,000 times and could not care less.
Yeah, she does get pincushioned in the story.
Yeah, just and then, but at the end, after turning the tide and making the battle a win, one traitor basically walks up to her and shoots her with the last pistol in the chest, and she dies.
Which is so bananas, because she just took, like, last cannons.
Right, but this is my point, though, is the Emperor, in my mind, this is what makes him different from a demon prince. A demon prince, you can shoot down and kill. The Emperor was helping her until the Imperium had won the battle, and then his need for her went away.
Oh, I'm sorry. So the Emperor helped her until he didn't really
need... he got bored and focused
over there. And then he just left and just took off?
Yep. Yeah. That, to me, that's living saint, is that they tend to be infused. Now, some of them can carry this infusion for a lot longer than this battle here, but it's a really good example because she was, to Brad's point, a last cannon hit her in the face, and she went, all right.
Good to hear.
What else you got? And then someone comes up with a last pistol, which is one of the weakest weapons in the game, and
it's commonly referred to as a flashlight.
Yeah. Yeah, it just drops her. So to kind of understand when we talk about living saints, because we're going to talk more about them as we get into some of the key figures, this is what they are. Everyone's got different opinions on them, and it's great. That's the way the game should be played. We should have lots of like, oh, this is my interpretation. This is your interpretation. My interpretation is that they're just infused with the light of the Emperor for as long as he feels like
it. No, well, I mean, if you want to go with the goodness, though, they're infused with the light of the Emperor for as long as the sisters need them to be infused with the light of the Emperor.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. They're
because a lot of the saints are invulnerable almost.
Yeah.
Until the conflict is over.
Yeah, until they're not needed, but not needed in a good way. It's not like the Emperor, I mean, he is discarding them, don't get me wrong, but he's using them to turn the tide of an unwinnable battle to the side of the Imperium.
And the thing is, to be honest, most of the saints are saints in defense of other sisters. There's so many stories of the saints defending a temple, defending a stronghold, defending a whatever, and they stay there until that defense is over, and then they're done. Most of the time, though, it's I have basically sacrificed myself to stop this from being taken.
Yep.
And then it's over.
And then once it's solved for the Emperor, it's there. So that being said, let's dive a bit more. Now we've kind of established saints. We've established a few things. We did that so we could then dive more into like the units of the sisters and the characters of the sisters. So we'll start off with some of the key units of the sisters. And like with every faction in the game, they have between 23 units, world leaders.
I counted.
It's 23.
I know, but you're okay. I'm getting my chi together.
I realize one of them is a rhino. I get that.
Yeah. You're also, like, several of them are just not being taken because they have nothing to do with it. They're an option.
Well, I mean, people don't think World Eater Terminators?
They're taking the words. We are Forge Fiends.
or maybe 1,000 Danish cheats like Space Marines. So the sisters, all of these encompass, the idea of the sisters is that they are a standalone army. So their units encompass every need for the sisters, from regular infantry, heavy infantry, vehicles, and then some unique specialties. Given that they're on almost every system in the galaxy, and as well as two headquarters, plus ships, we're talking millions, billions of them. The good thing for them is that they've got the Schola Progenium, which we discussed during the Assassin's cast.
Still a nightmare.
It's a nightmare thing. But the Schola is made up. The Schola grabs all the orphans in the galaxy.
Which is super easy because we're constantly killing the shit out of Imperial Guard. So your parents die all the time.
Right. And what makes this function is when we talk about the size of sisters, this is why I do believe it's in the billions, because there are billions, probably trillion plus guardsmen. And then on top of that, the Imperial Navy. So if every two of them has one child, so we're apparently doing the China 90s one child policy, there would still be over a billion orphans given the overall mortality rate. If half of them are female, that means the sororitas have a base recruit of a half billion.
They're doing all right.
Yeah.
They don't have to run that many commercials.
No, yeah. They're able to pull a bunch of them in. So that's is why the sister's order is massive, both in the hospitaliers and the educators, etc., but more importantly, the Sisters of Battle. And they have endless numbers of them. Let's dive into some of those Sisters of Battle. So the core are Battle Sisters, which are the standard infantry, who, as I complained about last time, wear the same power arm as a Space Marine, move at the same speed as a Space Marine.
Don't hate a BSS.
And shoot the same gun as a Space Marine.
Bolter.
They do have a lower toughness. They are T3.
They can also be poison.
So can Space Marine. I mean, to be fair.
To be fair.
Necrons can be poison.
No, they cannot.
Necrons can be poison, Brad. If I want to shoot them with my poison rifle, the Necron has to, I still get my anti-infantry.
I cannot let this go. I get trashed so much in Disco for this.
It's fun. In fact, the Sisters, I mean, and I say the Sisters can wield a lot of the same weapons as Space Marines. I do want to point out bolters, flamers, heavy bolters, multi-melters. The only one I realize they don't carry are las cannons.
They don't carry las cannons, which would actually semi be the tipping point because las cannons are so freaking heavy with the power pack.
Versus a multi-melter?
Multi-melter has the power. They actually shouldn't be able to pick that up. That's point. Because the multi-melter's power pack is power pack is in the gun. The las cannon's power pack is in the backpack and connected.
I had the same thought.
I got you.
I agree. Las cannons. I mean, the las cannon's heavier than a multi-melter. And then I'm like, went and looked up what multi-melters was again. I'm like,
yeah, I was going to say the gun itself is
all of it. You could not get that off the ground.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to pick it up.
Yeah.
It's so heavy.
Yeah. So anyway, they also get, jump packs, power swords.
They get heavy weapons too, the heavy melee weapons.
Yeah. I mean, I'm gonna harp back on this. Why do we have Space Marines?
Cool tattoos, ponytails.
Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out like what the point of a Space Marine is when I read about what the Sisters can do.
I mean, in the lore, a Space Marine could just punch to death an entire Sisters group.
Could it though?
Not on the board.
No, but you're saying in the lore.
As long as a saint doesn't show up.
No. I'm doing this. So in the lore, what happened when the Space Marines landed on Terra and tried to get to Goj?
Oh, that's true. They shot them in the face a lot.
That's my point. Is it's like the Sisters, this just seems like I feel like I'm solving a problem where it's like, hey Imperium, maybe instead of trying to get some Space Marines to do something, you take your billion Battle Sisters and go just deal with your problems.
I mean, seems legit.
Yeah. The only explanation I have for this, by the way, is just true belief. Is the fact that the Sisters, for whatever reason, their belief in the Emperor is so strong. And it is so, so very strong.
It's where their powers come from, though, dude. That's a real thing. We've addressed it. We still address it again. Sisters believe so hard that they actually have invulnerability sometimes. They believe so much that the Emperor will protect them. On the board, they have an invuln save.
Yeah.
That's a real thing. Oh,
and it's real. I get that.
They can hit ball volcano cannons and just go, so again, nope, the Emperor protects me.
Why are we using Space Marines?
I mean, I'm not doing a very good job of saying anything besides that.
You're basically just like, I'm going to argue your point for you, but more aggressively in your favor.
I feel like I'm just going to yell louder.
No, you see, we should use Space Marines because the Sisters are light years better and easier to make and more effective. That's why we should use Space Marines.
I feel you just made my argument for me, John.
I mean, sorry, diatribe stuff, but like, try to keep us on a topic here. So let's talk about a couple of the more key and actually, I think lore fun units within the Sisters. And the first one is like the Zephyrim, who the Zephyrim are a jump pack melee squad. They come in with jump packs and power.
I'm sorry, are you selling Zephyrim short? Yeah, sure, they have power armor. Sure, they have swords and jump packs. The main thing about Zephyrim is they're crazy as shit. They're
out of their minds.
Like, I would have started with that. They are crazy people. Yeah. And they launch them.
You're right. They're actually one of the cooler parts of the Sisters army. Good point, Brad.
They attack things that they have no business attacking. You have 5'3" Sisters going, demon lords, giant Tyranids. Good to hear. Let's melee them hand to hand.
Let's talk about the lore of them a little bit because the lore of them is actually cool. So they are functionally crazy. So in order to become a Zephyrim, you can only do it if you have a personal connection to the God Emperor through prayer. when they get this connection, they actually tend to reach a perpetual state of communion with him, during which they now no longer can speak normally. Like these sisters, if you interact with Zephyrim, they basically mumble.
You want to hear a breath theory?
Go.
The Emperor is just too wildly powerful. They get a connection to him, and he
beats their brain.
Yeah. His psychic presence is so big. It's the, in the Bible, you can't speak to God himself because the voice of God will destroy you.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what the Emperor.
The Zephyrim are just like.
They touched a little bit of the Emperor, but the Emperor is so psychically powerful at this point in time that just brushing his consciousness shatters your little baby brain.
Yeah. And yeah, the Zephyrim, when they land in combat, they just effectively go into like a blood rage for the Emperor and cut through stuff, which is why on the tabletop, they move at the same speed as a Space Marine with a jump pack.
Yep.
And I think they're one strength lower. That's about it. Same weapon. Yeah, same weapon. And they're able to wield these things. And it's because they actually do have a spiritual connection to the Emperor. And it's not a one-way connection. Zephyrim wrecks shop. And
Zephyrim are awesome.
Yeah, I've played against them a few times. It hasn't gone great. On the other end of the spectrum, though, I do want to laugh at Retributors?
Retributors are the exact opposite because they are... weirdly, I mean, you look at them as librarians almost.
Yeah.
They are so chill. They're heavy weapon squads, people that shoot the big guns.
Right.
They jump out of transports, shoot the big guns. They're in the middle of combat. A lot of their heavy weapons are very short range.
Yeah, I did laugh. Actually, in the notes made, like, oh, yeah, they use their calmness to aim their heavy weapons and slay foes at range. And I'm like, well, actually, it's actually all Melta. So
yeah.
range is
–
I'm not right in front of you, but I'm – not, yeah. But I can see you.
You're like, I can jab you and shoot this weapon at you. Yeah. That's the whole point, though, is that they're so chill in the face of epic, like they are danger close.
Yeah, it would make, and I'll be honest, the lore on them kind of I struggle with a little bit because I think about them as the idea of being the soldier holding the very large gun who's just calm enough to fire it in combat. Yeah. But at the same time, they're holding a gun that they just should not be able to pick up.
True, but like in my mind, they don't do it in the game enough. I really feel that their direct is like long fangs.
Yeah.
It's just I've seen some shit. I can be put here. And also, when you're equipped with these weapons, these are expensive, real things for the...
Oh, I mean, and a squad, one thing I will laugh at is a squad of Retributors is going to be 5 multi-meltas. Right?
Well, four.
4 multi-meltas and?
And a melta.
Is there, and I'm actually asked this question because Brad plays this game more than I do. Is there any space marine that carries that level?
The dev squads do.
The dev squads can carry all multi-meltas?
The dev squads can carry 4 plus a special.
Okay.
They're the same.
So they're the same.
They're the same, but these girls have to do all of it in your, because they come with, The main weapons you take in the squad, and has been forever, are, because they've had special rules for them over the years, and they've also had money of story, is multi-meltas and heavy flamers.
Yeah.
So on the board, your usual, let's just say on the board, let's do a comparison.
Can I do one caveat there for people who don't play the game? These are two weapons that are primarily found on vehicles.
Yes.
Yeah, these are not.
Yeah, they're ramboing all this up.
Yeah, these are not normal handheld weapons. One in the guard can carry these.
This is why I want to compare it on the board though. And this is why you have to have that cool head though. Because the average weapon carried by a Marine heavy weapon squad have ranges of 36 to 48 inches.
Yeah.
Which on a board that's only...
it's almost the width of a board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you have sisters who show up with a weapon that shoots either 12 or max 24, and they only get their special rules if they're at 12 or less.
Yeah.
So they have to get danger close up in person of... I don't know, a demon lord, a giant hive tyrant, because you're not just, let me tell you what you're not shooting with your sisters, cultists.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
I know how to screen.
But I'm saying the girls are coming out and they're shooting the scariest terrible thing on the opponents.
I mean, I laugh. Like they actually, they come out of a transport carrying weapons that that transport would struggle to carry.
And also right next to the
thing. Right next to them. And then they come out of it and pull up these guns. This is why retributors are really cool. Because they take these horrifying guns and just melt an enemy.
Also, pretty big risk reward here, because you better kill the thing that you're standing in front of, because it's usually something terrifying.
True.
You know, hey, man, I shot the bloodthirster with this multi-melted. Did you hit? Nah, I was a little shaky and I missed it. It's going to be bad.
It's going to be bad. But yeah, that's a good transition to another chunk of them are Celestines and Dominions.
Which are
effectively the same thing. Yeah. Celestines are the melee version. Dominions are the ranged. And these are just the elite infantry. And
again,
I will say you say Celestine model.
You say ranged, it's up close and personal guns. Yeah. It's flamers and maltas.
I will say I love the Celestine model, especially the ones in the Paragon warsuits.
Paragon warsuits are amazing. They're actually semi-newer to the game and the lore.
They are. And
they're
they're
walkers.
You ready for this? Because I'm about to point out, how the hell does that thing work? It's an exoskeleton warsuit. So a person is, how does this thing actually function at full speed?
I saw The Matrix.
You mean Aliens.
Well, I saw Aliens. Yeah, also.
I mean, it's twice the size of a Space Marine in power armor. No black carapace, just a pilot with some levers. Yeah. And it's able to,
Also, by the way, no front armor.
Yeah.
You're sitting in a lawn chair.
Just
look at the model. But everybody, Google that. Google Paragon warsuit.
Yeah.
And just go, hey, why don't they put a screen door in front of you?
It's the same as, Invictor's
warsuit.
Yeah. Well, that guy's wearing power armor, though.
Do I mean the Sitchers are wearing power armor? They're just still sitting in a chair.
That's how it is. Yes, they're wearing power armor.
I mean, I would like.
I just want to point out this is a lot. This is again. I think the problem is I'm answering my own question. It's the power of the Emperor allowing them to do this. But I just like the idea that it's a person without a black carapace wearing power armor, while wearing that power armor, they're then powering. They're maneuvering an exosuit. So, just to kind of paint the picture for everybody, when you're wearing power armor, your hands are a giant glove.
Yeah.
Right. And it's larger than your fingers.
With a billion sensors into it.
Yeah. So the idea would be, so this person is manipulating the glove that they're wearing. And then that glove is manipulating levers that are then manipulating another arm of the thing that you're inside of.
I'm going to squirrel so hard on this.
Yeah.
No, I know.
It just makes no sense.
You cut it for his, but like it's, you do realize that like, most of the people that run power armor and or any of these suits freaks out when they're not in their suit because they're taught their whole lives.
How to run it.
Also because they have all of their implants are made to interact.
That's fair. Suit. And I'm going to have this same diatribe when we get to Knights. But anyway.
I'm just saying a lot of these people, like when they're not in their suits, are losing their shit because, hey man, like I have half my biomechanics are only made for being inside this suit.
I am still going to crap pretty hard on this concept of like, I need to be nicer about this. It doesn't make any sense under the laws of physics. And I'm talking about a galaxy built, not necessarily the laws of physics.
So I was going to say, what?
I realize my diatribe here is not really
You mean
fair.
The magic galaxy? Yeah.
But I will stand by, let's just use them, not Space Marines. That I'm dead right on. But anyway, what we should be focusing on now, though, is some of the more fun elements of the Sisters. And by fun, I mean
we did
super messed up
bits. No, like nightmare shit.
Well, we're going to get...
Well, let's talk about where we're hopping from.
Yeah.
We just went with two different elite level Sisters that have rose the ranks to be the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
And they get the best equipment, the best weapons, the best suits, the whatever. And then we're going to go into, I don't know. Oh, John, you could do the least offensive thing ever. Oh, what's your penalty for doing that thing?
Being Repentia. So let's spend some time on the Repentia, which is the second or maybe third most screwed up part of the Sisters of Battle. So the Repentia are members of the sisters who have failed the sisters in one way or the other. Nothing bad, by the way.
By the way,
if you really fail, we have other ones.
We're going to do wild air quotes.
Yeah.
Because failed is such a bananas wide
scale. Yeah, exactly. We're not talking like oh, I failed a heresy.
No, you just get killed.
Yeah, this is most likely someone who hesitated for a moment when looking at a demon prince. It could be someone who like mispronounced a litany, although that person
also obviously. you didn't succeed in killing the hive tyrant,
yeah,
right away kind of thing. Oh, you had to have backup come in.
Yeah,
so you didn't kill it with your power sword.
So these sisters, what's interesting about them is that you're not put into the Repentia. You put yourself into the Repentia. You feel
still bananas. Yeah,
you feel that you failed it. So these are all self-reported failings, which is
this is also. You could be a failing of thought. Some people go into the Repentia because they had doubts.
Yeah, but I think this is also important because the sisters are so stalwart in their belief that not admitting that you had a failing to them would be a sign of corruption and thus heresy.
You have people in the Repentia, and this is not all of them. This is just, but I mean, this is stories. Repentia are people... Some of them are people that just had literally a bad dream about a fight coming up where they didn't perform and they join the Repentia because they go, if I doubt the Emperor's will, I clearly.
Exactly. Am I don't deserve, and this is where I like Repentia a lot because this part actually makes sense to me. So to a sister, there is nothing more important than their connection to the God Emperor. Barton, there's nothing in there. By failing at any level of their faith in that emperor, they feel that they have let the emperor down. And their greatest fear every sister has is losing the connection to the emperor, either by failing him or just him abandoning them. And that's what makes these Repentia so crazy, is because they will do anything to repent. Get it?
Yeah.
Get it? So... The Repentia believe the only way to regain the Emperor's light is to thrust themselves into battle wearing nothing but his light. Thankfully, GW didn't go full weird and make these naked models.
I'm not even going to go.
There are third
the original, I was saying.
Yeah, don't. I know. Anyway, they cleaned it up a little bit. So what they wear are basically cloths.
They effectively...
They are better armor than an orc.
No, but yeah, that's true. I mean, effectively what they're wearing, if you want to go real world thing, they're supposed to be wearing sackcloth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's designed to be.
They're nothing. Wearing uncomfortable nothing to repent for their failings to the Emperor.
But that's not, they're wearing nothing. They're carrying a very much so something. And I love this. They renamed. So obviously, I hate chain swords. We've been over this. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go listen to the weaponry of the Imperium.
Yeah, cast. But they're not doing a chain sword. They're wielding an eviscerator.
Yeah, the penitent eviscerator, which is a chain sword that's like even larger and less. And it's an even larger abomination of the laws of physics.
They are legitimately wielding Cloud Sword from Final Fantasy VII. All of them.
Well, no, but it's a chain version.
Yeah,
a chain
sword. They're wielding the Buster Sword, but a chain version of it. And it's also that big. It is so much bigger than that.
Yeah, it's larger than them. The models actually look cool as hell. And what they do is they just charge headlong into enemies carrying a chain sword. And all they're trying to do is kill as many as they possibly can before they die. Because that death, the Emperor will, forgive them.
One of my favorites is they effectively have... They have their Invuln save because their belief in the Invuln.
Yeah.
Or sorry, belief in the Invuln. Belief in the Emperor. But they have what's called in the game a Feel No Pain, an extra roll.
Yep.
Because they are so driven by the Emperor that getting a mortal wound.
We should actually call out what these are. So if you.
Today.
If you've never played the game, you want to know what a Feel No Pain is. Go watch Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And
merely a flesh wound.
It's just a flesh wound. That's what these things are. You can cut a chunk
horribly
of the
injured,
and they just keep fighting because they don't feel the pain of the injury.
They just continue to fight.
Yeah.
You're like, you just lost your leg, sister. Yeah, I got another
flesh
one.
Wound.
Yeah, I'll just hop over. I'm still holding my eviscerator.
Yeah, I've got my eviscerator. I will gnaw your leg off.
Yeah. Like, I don't even, why are you asking me this?
Yeah. So obviously a lot of them die in battle.
Yes.
If any of them do survive, they're viewed as regaining the blessing of the emperor and return back to the Order of the Sisters. And there's, what's crazy about this is actually a lot more of this. Here's what I'll say about this. Repentia should have a very high mortality rate. And they do in the lore.
In the game, they live all the time.
I detest Miracle Dice because of Repentia. I'm Brad too. We have bounced off Repentia horrifyingly.
Yeah, people with a 6-up save with a 5-up final pain.
Well, yeah.
Obviously, they're going to make all of them.
Early 9th edition when they had like
unlimited?
Basically unlimited Miracle Dice. You could change all the sixes.
That was an Evan Chalice thing.
I know it was, and I don't miss Evan Chalice. That they deserve their timeout. That's how this goes. It's the same way. Like, we saw Space Wolves kind of come back. We saw, ooh, are the wolves back? And those got nerfed again. Why? We're not over 7th edition, guys. We're not over it.
Well, they were over me playing in the end of time.
Jesus. So what I do like about the Repentia, though, is that there are some very key stories we're going to get to where the sisters of Repentia who survived the battle end up gaining the ultimate light of the emperor and, you know, hint, hint, saints. One of my favorite pieces about Repentia in the lore, though, is the way that the sisters of battle view them. They are not pariahs within the sister. The sisters of battle actually
because the Repentia chose to be Repentia. This is sisters making effectively the ultimate sacrifice because you're not expected to survive.
Right, but you're doing this. And so they view them, they don't treat them as outcasts. And in fact, they actually root for them. Like the sisters of battle. And I like this because a lot of times when you think about like something that would be a Repentia in a lore, it would be, oh yeah, they deserve to die. They have harmed the emperor. The sisters of battle are, you know, they basically, after the battle, they rush over to where the Repentia were on the battlefield to see if any have survived because it's like their dream is knowing that there is salvation, basically.
Well, it's nothing but love for them,
yeah.
Period. There's really, just huge love for them.
Yeah, really great stories.
I Repentia are one of my favorite lore stories, 100%.
However.
You talk about, well, you know what's not a fun story?
Yeah. However, let's have some fun with. Now, as we just said, the Repentia are people who, in their own mind, have slighted the emperor.
Chose.
Yeah. What I'm getting is they, in their own mind, have slighted the emperor, and they have chosen to redeem themselves for it. Others slight the emperor, and it's chosen for them to redeem themselves and the emperor. Well, and we're about to talk about arcoflagellants and penitent engines.
I mean, penitent engines are worse, but arcoflagellants are...
Yeah, penitent engines are worse, but it's not
arcoflagellants
like,
are just a prison sentence.
Yeah, but we're talking about dying in a fire or dying in a hotter fire.
Well, dying in a slow simmer fire.
Yeah, these are...
Arcoflagellants are... Effectively, just prisoners. They're people that have been, they've committed heresy.
But I want to spend more time on this because this is actually morbidly funny.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
So the sisters, as you could imagine, capture a number of heretics. All right, and
these aren't just their captures though.
Oh, everyone does.
No. Yeah. Let's go into what they are. Arcoflagellants are people that judge, jury, whoever the sisters. Mm-hmm. The imperial judicial system, whoever, has sentenced you to death. And the sisters go, give them to us.
Right. But the why give them to us? Because this is why I love the sisters and their like psychotic devotion. The sisters believe that everyone would want to be a Repentia. Yeah. And so the sisters do is their viewpoint is I'm going to take this person who has committed a sin against the Imperium and has deserves to die for the Imperium, but I'm going to give them a chance to serve the Imperium before I kill them. Now, they all die. None of the victims chose to become arcoflagellants. 0%.
Also, all of them would add as many much as you want.
Yeah, rather die.
Rather die. Yeah, 100. Like, oh, I forgot to mention, when they make you an arcoflagellant, not a super great procedure.
Yeah, let's go through that process. Because I do, this is just, it's funny in some messed up ways. So first, you're lobotomized, servitor style.
Wait for it, though. John, you made it sound almost nice. You're like lobotomized, so that means I don't know what's going on? Wait a minute.
Well, to a point.
They keep their awareness.
Yeah, their awareness, but everything else is turned off.
No, then, but I'm saying you still know what's happening. You again, are in a nightmare situation where you're aware of what's happening.
Yes and no. I'm going to argue with you here because they're not fully aware. Like, if they're fully aware, then this process wouldn't work. What they are is they're alive and they're alert. There's no higher processing.
They also feel and know what's going on.
They don't know. They feel what's going on. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, because if they knew what's going on, then this wouldn't work. Because we have to go through how the process is going to go. So, fun argument between us. But so they lobotomize them out so that they really only have kind of a base level of awareness. Then they cut off their arms and replace them. Well, because this is why these things are actually. I hate these things on the tabletop more from like.
They're
like,
so awesome. Though.
That's why I hate them because they have wrecked my armies. But anyway, they cut their arms off and their arms are replaced with either just spinning blades or mechanical whips.
Which are monofilament whips, cut through anything.
Which, yeah, will cut through anything. And then they have a weird helmet shoved on their head. And we'll get to that in a minute. Because this helmet turns them on and off.
Yeah, because
which we'll get to more in a second.
Oh, I forgot to mention. You forgot to mention the fact that they also have, I don't know, one or two tubes attached to them.
Yeah, their entire spine has these canisters and tubes attached to them that just create a bunch of chemicals in it. And these chemicals are designed to hit their body and create a level of rage and hatred that is just blinding. So that's why when Brad and I were arguing about, are you aware? Not much.
Kind of. But also, this is everything they give them is a lethal dose. By the way, in the game, these guys don't die a lot of times. However, at the end of the game, all arcoflagellates
just fall over.
All arcoflagellates should.
Well, sometimes they do recover them, but it's we'll get them.
Kind of. Yeah.
So what's crazy is that the arcoflagellant, the helmet that they're wearing, it just basically turns them on or off. So they're usually left in the off position for obvious reasons. When it's time for battle, they turn they basically put them in a transport, drop them, and then turn the helmet on. And when they turn the helmet on, also all the chemicals inject their body, which put them in a stage of just insane rage, but also incredible strength.
Speed.
I'm going to actually reference a game called Rifts and something called a juicer. That's what these are.
You're such an old man.
I know.
Also, I played Rifts so many times.
It's such a good game. Way too complicated. That's why I never took off. It's a good game. But anyway.
Because taking a character spent the entire day.
Yeah. What this does is they're just full of murder time. This next bit's a little bit stupid, but it's cool. The helmet that they're wearing has a visor in it that lets them see out. The Sisters of Battle control this helmet.
It's so weird, though, because it's a super sci-fi version of horse blinders.
Yeah, exactly. Where they can only see now in their eyes what are their enemies. So they won't even see a Sister of Battle on the field. No. And then because of their rage, all they have is a desire to rush forward and kill whatever they see.
Because also they're they say they feel no pain. They have all of the pain. That's the whole reason they don't feel the pain.
Because
they went, hey, you guys go faster if we just put acid in your blood. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, but there'll be acid in my blood. I'm like, you'll be fine. Yeah.
So the flagellants just rush the field. Now, this part does make a ton of sense to me because I'm like, well, what if a sister's fighting someone? Is a flagellant run over and kill that thing? Like, he'd still got spinning blades and spinning whips. Feel like there'd be some collateral damage. Yeah. So I think there's mostly, I say it's because they should always be deployed in the front of the army as skirmishers, but I've played in the tabletop and they seem to come out of the backfield an awful lot.
Also out of vehicles.
Yeah. Looking at you, sister players. And so the flagellants mostly just die as they're slaughtering. However, at the end of the battle, if any are there, one of two things happen. Either A, they're turned off and used again, which is very rare.
They just shoot them.
Yeah, because it's more common
than they execute still, them. There is no redemption for the arcoflagellants. They still have the sentence of death.
But that's the thing. There is redemption because they took their evilness.
My bad.
And now thanks to
sorry.
All of the process put together, they now get to go serve the emperor.
John's also a big fan of the witch trials, where if you sink and die, you were obviously innocent.
It's a matter of you just weigh them against the duck. It's really easy. It's not a complicated system. Yeah, that was almost a spit. There we go. I got you.
He almost killed me. Jesus.
I got bred mid Dr. Diet Dr. Pepper there on a Monty Python joke, and there was no way that wasn't sinking in.
But like these guys.
Small rocks.
These.
God, I love that movie.
It's just, this is a death sentence, and it's a horrible death sentence.
At the end of it,
we can argue the awareness of them, because I do think that they want them to feel the pain because they want them to redeem themselves through the pain.
But the problem is the reason, kind of
a sister's theme.
Yeah, I struggle with the awareness because it's an element where I'm like, if they're aware, they just take those whips and hit the sisters. Because a lot of these are
no. I think they're aware. A lot of these are
true heretics.
Awareness doesn't mean that you have control of your body.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
Remember, servitors. Servitors have no control over anything
that
they do.
That's fair.
They just are aware. They're a passenger in their own body.
That's a good way of putting it. Okay. Now.
By the way, everything we just said about arcoflagellants sounds bad. Luxury. That's going back to Monty Python.
Yeah, that's the better one. Yeah, exactly. I wish I could be spat at in the face. My dream.
Luxury.
Yeah, today is going to be a Monty Python day. Sorry, this is a battle. It's there.
But by the way, what happened to you, GW employee, that you created the penitent engine?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
This is someone who went to one too many torture museums.
What the crap is happening?
I'll be in London later this year. But anyway, so penitent engines. So when a member of the Imperium specifically commits an unforgivable crime in which execution or arcoflagellation is considered too lenient, they use the penitent engine. I just want to give some examples. This would be like a member of the ecclesiarchy or a sister who is turned against the emperor. Any member, anyone who infiltrates. It's so like a regular citizen who like murders a priest. No one cares. This is someone who like intentionally infiltrates. And it's specifically
or on the battlefield.
Yeah.
Loses the lives of
sisters. The penitent engines are the arcoflagellants means you did something against the emperor. The penitent engines usually means you did something against the ecclesiarchy or the emperor kind of directly. Like maybe you got a little bit too close to the golden throne type thing. like these are extreme, and there really shouldn't be that many of them. That's just me bitching because they're hard to kill. And this is what happens when the sisters send some blueprint requests to the ADMEC. And the ADMEC go, all right, I got this.
Which, by the way, not even a thought. They were just like, oh, sure, we'll make that. I can definitely make the ultimate torture device. Yeah. I had some blueprints already in the lab because I'm a weird dude.
Yeah. We're actually already making this. We couldn't figure out how to use it, but all right.
You want more of them? Got it.
Yeah, it's like the Star Wars episode one or episode two. Where Kenobi discovers
Attack of the Clones.
It's like you just have all of these already.
Yeah,
yeah, we've been making them for a while. Why? What's up?
Yeah, like do you want the first or second wave? Because we have so many.
You've got tons of these things there, and the ADMEC is just like, oh, what were you going to use them for, ADMEC? A thing.
Yeah.
At that
stuff.
Point, at that point, ADMEC goes, oh. I mean,
you know,
we weren't going to actually use them. We were just manufacturing tens of thousands
just
of them
in case.
For no reason. Yeah, we were just. Yeah,
we were just trying to suit your needs.
Yeah, we're just tinkering in the garage. You know how these things happen. Don't mind us.
Well, let's tell everybody what a penitent engine is.
Yeah. So penitent
besides engine, a nightmare.
Yeah. So it is a giant bipedal machine robot, whatever you would call it, with a giant open space in the front. In the space in the front, you place your victim, and they are actually in what is effectively a crucifix position, arms to each side, legs down, and basically.
There's no way I'm skipping this part of the note. You know, John's going to try to overdo this because he writes these half the time when he's half asleep. But
I also write while drinking sometimes. But yeah,
all the note says is, but not similar enough to create any intellectual property violations.
Yeah. I wrote their position similarly to a crucifix, but not similarly enough to create any intellectual property violations. So it's like, yeah, close-ish. Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Anyway, The victim then is wired into the engine so that their mind becomes the power source for the machinery, but they don't have any control over it.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Their mind becomes the power source. No. Their suffering becomes the power source.
Accurate, yeah.
Whoa. You're like, hey, they're doing this through the powers of their mind. Nope.
Their mind is like, they use a piece of their mind, like a microprocessor, to kind of route the whole everything through.
Oh, forgot to mention that when you get strapped into a penitent engine, it's basically, hey, you're getting your catheter while you're awake. Yep. And it's so much worse.
And so what happens is, it's not just their brain, but also their whole body gets hooked in. And so then the chemicals start pumping into their body. And these chemicals are designed to do two things. First, pain. Create a consistent sense of pain.
They amplify. But
also keep you alive.
Well, they amplify all sensations of pain. Just pain.
It's just pure pain. But also they keep you alive. So just by sitting in this penitent engine, you are in excruciating, unending pain. Then the machine fills your brain with every painful and sad and horrible emotion
you should feel. You should feel bad about betraying the emperor.
Your body is in absolute agony. Your brain is melting. Our next cast is going to be Drukhari. Hint, hint. This living torture chamber is then just sent out towards the enemy. And the only way that you can make this pain stop is to die.
Which is super hard because you are juiced up to the max, but you're also in a ceramite vehicle.
Well, not in the front.
No, but I'm just saying, as long as any piece of you is even remote, by the way, you have to blow up your head.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Like, you could cut off your head.
The individual,
and you would still be fine in this thing.
Yeah, the individual inside the pendant engine is fully, like, their body is fully exposed to the front, so that they
amplifying all pain.
Yeah, every shot that hits them, they feel. But as we just said, their body's also wired in, which means that if you shoot the leg off of someone in a pendant engine,
you could shoot. Fine. You could actually kill. You could take your M16. And go from the feet and shoot all the way up. And as long as the head's still in existence.
Yeah, the head's in existence. Yeah,
they're still feeling the pain.
Feeling it.
Yep.
So the pendant engine, so your only way to die is, the only way to stop the pain is to die. And it's incredibly hard to die. But what's also equally messed up about a pendant engine is that they don't give them like ranged weapons. So this isn't a dreadnought. They get flamers and fists.
And they're going to punch stuff.
And they get sent head first into the enemy with just flamers and punching.
They should move faster, by the way, or they should scout faster and everything else. Stop. They should be far away.
No, sisters move too fast. No. I know you're right, but I just have enough issues.
They should be so far in front of the army.
Fair. I mean, the sisters, the one part I do like about this, though, the funny part is that the sisters of battle take a special joy watching when an appendant engine explodes in like fire and blood. Because they think, in their mind, they're so happy for the victim. The victim got, they got repentia. They sat
redemption.
There, they went out there and they did a horrible thing for the emperor. And we strapped them to the pendant engine. And look, they went out there and they redeemed themselves for the emperor by dying gloriously and exploding while trying to kill his foes.
The sisters have problems.
Yeah, I really honestly can't tell if sisters are good or bad.
They're bad. I'm sorry, they just are.
Yeah, there's a lot of evil. Whew. All right, let's now focus on some of the key members or key characters of the current sisters. And we'll kind of do these in short to long. The shortest one is Morven Ball.
She's the shortest? She's also the most important.
Yeah, but the story is super short, the thing of Morven Ball. She does have a book. It's very long, but it's actually, I'm going to be candid, not a lot really happens in it. It's just a book about her being a badass.
You can edit me out. I dislike this book. I read this book. I can't say I hate it. I just, she felt like a character forced on me.
That's my viewpoint on Morven Ball. So Morven Ball, I'll be honest, the cliff notes on her are way better than the book. So anyway, the cliff notes on Morven Ball are that she was a Celestine who just suddenly promoted to be the abbess of the sisters. As we said earlier, the abbess is supposed to be selected by having all the groups of sisters get together and vote for one person to be their leader. she, the Ecclesiarchy, decided the sisters were a bit of a danger and decided to just make their own. So the Ecclesiarchy, who were over in charge of the sisters, but not in charge of the sisters, just did this thing. And the story is kind of funny because literally the Ecclesiarchy just shows up on her planet and tells her that she's the abbess. And she just goes, well, hold on a second, prays for like 4 days, and then goes, okay.
Yeah, but it continues on because she wins. Morvenval is the effective equivalent of winning the lotto for 3 days in a row.
Yeah. And so she, it's really, the story's just odd, but we have to cover her because of this.
She's awesome on the table.
Well, she's awesome. And actually, and even in the book, she does awesome things. But like
awesome.
I think your description of it feels the book's forced on you is accurate. Because what happens is like they made a quick story. And the story is, Morvenval is supposed to effectively make the sisters less powerful. The Ecclesiarchy promotes someone who's unknown, she's not unpopular, but it's not popular because she's unknown.
She's just not connected is what she is.
They make her the abbess of the sisters. And their idea is, with her there, we'll be able to have control. And Morvenval does do some funny things. Like she shows up back on Terra and wears her power armor while wandering around talking to the other lords of Terra, which is incredible. So sisters themselves are intimidating to be around. And Morven's a large sister. So she's a large, powerful, strong
sister. She's a powerful girl.
And she is... and she's wearing power armor.
Which makes while double the size almost.
While arguing with you. So this was actually kind of funny. And I like this. What's even funnier about this is that she's there around the same time Gilliman reappears back in Terra. And Gilliman takes one look at her and goes,
G-Man has a conversation with her and just goes, I like the cut of your jib. You're now a lord of Terra.
Exactly, yeah.
And he goes, you guys listen to them. And he does the... the unforgiven on him and goes, and if you don't, I'll come back and kill every goddamn last one of you. And everybody goes, what the shit just happened?
And that's what the story is funny is because it's like, this is where I think this would have been mistake GW made, honestly, was they made it a very long book where it could have been a lot quicker because the story is funny that the Ecclesiarchy was like, oh, sisters are too powerful. Let's just grab some random sister and put her in charge. And then we can regain our power of the sisters. Fast forward like 1 month and that person is now a Lord of Terra and fully backed by the Space Marines, which means also fully backed by the AdMech.
Again,
so it's over.
And it's a big thing. It wasn't just this is a stamp thing. G-Man eyeballed everyone up and went, yeah, she's the Lord of Terra. Say something about it or do something. If I come back here, just letting you know, if I come back from the front lines, shit's going down. Yeah. And then she would just double down and went, I'll kill every one of you right now. And you're like, what? And the Lords of Terra were like, what the shit just happened?
How did this happen? No, this is the opposite of our plan.
You're like, I thought she was going to be easily controlled. And she's like, I'll shoot you in the face right now.
Yeah.
Like, what time is it? I just want you to know what I'm going to put on your autopsy. Yeah.
But then, of course, the reason what sucks then is then she just gets bored back on Terra and just goes and leads some crusades.
Immediately.
Instantaneously
takes it. She's like, you could make such a big difference. She's like, I agree with you 100% and leaves immediately.
Yeah. And the stories of her make her sound awesome because when she goes, it's called the Philosopher's Belt, which is a dumb name, but anyway. And it's part of the Indominus Crusade. And there's just a ton of enemies of mankind. And she's out there leading from the front. Like out there.
She kicks the shit out of people.
Well, and she may be a saint in all candor. If you look at some of the stuff that she does there, I could see GW shifting her to being a saint.
I actually think, Brad theory again, I think the reason on the table people with her get rerolls is because of the fact that she has a psychic connection to the Emperor again. And she gives power to the people she's with.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you read the books and you read the Codex, she's very saint-ish, is what I would say.
I really think that she has, she's warp power. She's immaterial power. But the warp, it gets a bad thing.
Yeah. And so she's, but that being said, if you want to read the book. It's just,
the Codex is better than the book.
Oh, the Codex is really good.
You know what? Screw this. You know, we're going to go to my...
She's a good cliff note.
How about this? We're going to go to somebody that I'm going to fanboy like a madman on.
Oh, really? I know Celestine.
I love St. Celestine so
really?
Much.
I didn't know that. Okay. All right. Well, anyway, we'll do St. Celestine. Now, St. Celestine.
She's a proper saint is why I think.
Yeah. Well, she does have wings.
She's also the first in the game.
Oh, the first thing on the tabletop.
On the tabletop, she's the first saint.
Yeah.
She just, this is when I think saint.
St. Celestine's one of the best written parts of the sisters.
She's just so good.
Yeah. So let's dive into Brad fanboying.
I am. I'm going to let John talk about it, then I will come in excitedly every once in a while.
Sometimes GW writes really well. This is one of the ones that they did. So no one knows the full origins of St. Celestine. All we know is at one point she became a Repentia for the Order of Our Martyred Lady. That's all we know. While as a Repentia, they had a massive battle, and she's found dead at the end of the battle with over 100 enemies that she had killed.
By herself,
single-handedly. Yeah, all around her. They bring her back to give her kind of do last rites, so to speak, and bury her. And as they're cleaning her up, they notice that she's actually not dead, that she does have some life there. So then they start wiping all the blood off her, and they discover that she has no wounds on her body at all. And then she sits up, like Undertaker style.
She's also like...
It's Undertaker
style. She's also juiced up at the point. She's effectively perfect at that point. She has no injuries.
Yeah, no injuries. And she just sits up. And then the next day, she's back fighting again. Again, the front of the battle line. This one, she just survives. And this continues battle after battle after battle. Celestine is in the dead front, taking all the shots and just going, yeah, I don't care.
But let's talk about what she does in the tabletop. In the tabletop, Celestine can get killed, and on a 2+ on a 6-sided die, she gets back up with full wounds.
Yeah, 84% of the time she gets back up and goes, all right.
Yeah. What else? I didn't hear no bell.
Yeah. Yeah. What else you got?
And to me, and this is why I'm fanboying on it, I love, and this is OP. This is anime style.
Yeah.
But I love it. Because this is what a saint is. This is times of need, my OP
and
HQ shows
buffs
up.
Buffs the stuff around her. And that's where in the lore, this is where, again, as we've discussed before, when lore and tabletop line up, it's usually bad for the game, but it's actually exciting to read. So she, in this like campaign of battle that she was on, ends up leading the crusade because all the ecclesiarch priests are like, yeah, let's let her be in charge.
She's Joan of Arc times 1,000.
Yeah. But what's cool is that while leading the crusade, she just does this random detour. So she's in a system door to this random planet. No one knows what the hell's going on. And she finds this ancient crypt and she just walks into the crypt. And everyone, it's like, and
she shows up with legendary armor. It's definitely orange, which is most games legendary.
Yeah, it's a D&D quest. So she then comes out of the crypt, and she's wearing the armor and carrying the sword of a saint named Saint Catherine. Saint Catherine is obviously long dead. Saint Catherine is one of the women who was with Alicia Domenica when she met the Emperor.
She's one of the leaders of the original orders.
Exactly, and Saint Catherine, what's interesting about her is that, you know, she died, but before she died, she hid her armor and her sword, and it was meant to be at some point the savior of.
Well, it's a prophecy. It's one of the prophecies, and she fulfilled all the ABCs of the prophecy.
So Celestine comes out wearing this armor, which is why she glows in all imagery. It's because she's wearing this armor.
Well, also she has wings.
There's also the wings do help. the wings make her subtle. And so Celestine, wearing this, she's now a true saint, and she goes on to lead a bunch of campaigns. What's funny, though, is that then she dies. Celestine gets killed while fighting a Chaos Marine Warmaster who literally
dies. Well, I was just about to say, it's not like he Queensberry rules her.
No, he blew up a nuclear bomb she was leaning on.
Yeah, I was saying, he handed her the bomb and then pushed the button.
Yeah, she was next to it. So she is dead, except anyone listening to this cast is going, no, I literally played against her last week. Like, she's not dead. And that's because all of the stories of her dying actually predated, and I actually don't know when they brought the model back. I think it was less than 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So then they brought the model back.
So some of this is like, what, 8th edition? Or was first?
Yeah, 1st edition. No, it was the 1st edition, but like, so she was.
It was 3rd.
3rd edition, then gone.
And then gone. And then they came, I think it was 8th edition.
It's got to be 8th because the model quality's got to be 8th. I'm going with 8th because in 7th edition, the models didn't look that good. So,
but she was, how about this? When they started pushing the story forward, which is 8th edition.
Yeah.
Eighth edition was when we had 30 years of status quo. Now we're moving on. Fall of Cadia, Celestine shows up.
So in the Fall of Cadia, she reappears. While this is like, this is before Abaddon breaks the planet. So Abaddon is, or Abaddon, whichever way I'm
trying to say. Oh, I'm going the Don always.
Yes, yeah, it's Abaddon. So while Abaddon is invading Cadia, kind of invasion, this is like his 11th invasion of Cadia, but it's part one of this whole invasion. He's actually making a lot of ground and blasting through the defenses. Out of nowhere, Celestine just falls out of the sky with five full companies of Battle Sisters who disappeared 1400 years before. I was just about to say,
it's all people that were lost for over 1,000 years. Yeah,
they all appear at once, and Abaddon doesn't go well for him.
Well,
and
he also didn't go, hey, are you going to have mysterious people come from out of nowhere?
Yeah, comes out of nowhere, and she fights them off. Now, she successfully, this unfortunately does lead to Abaddon's using of the Blackstone Fortress to crack the planet in half.
He was retreating.
Yeah.
This is nonsense. I'm pretty done with you. Yeah,
this is dumb. I'm out. Stop this. And we're going to do more in the Fall of Cadia in the future because it's actually really interesting. But after the Cadia falls, Celestine ends up joining Call to go resurrect Gilliman.
She gets weirdly roped into this. Mm-hmm. Her story's odd. This is why I kind of have, she's in so many other people's cool stories.
And they did a good job with her because they bring her back and it's kind of like, whereas prior saints, like we said earlier, they flame out. Celestine doesn't. Celestine becomes this, actually, she's
the go-to.
So she then helps Call bring Gilliman back to life. Then she helps Gilliman get from Ultramar to Terra. And then she actually sits with Gilliman to help decide what the future of the Imperium is going to be, which I do think of like, this is me having a weird sense of humor, but imagine like, you know, so it's going to be Gilliman, it's going to be Celestine, it's going to be Trajan. They're all probably in a room. And somebody opening a door, looking in there, and there's a woman with wings and glowing eyes, you know, Trajan, and then whatever the hell Gilliman looks like at this point, and just going, yep, nope. Or even better story, be a Lord of Terror, like, I have an opinion, trying to walk in that room.
Let's be honest, Gilliman always looks like Augustus, but continue.
That's fair, yeah. One of my favorite stories about her, though, is later on, she's fighting an incursion against World Eaters, and Karn the Betrayer, yes, he will do a World Eater cast, you don't have to ask, obviously we'll do it, cuts her head off. Actually, he beats the hell out of her. He rips her wings out of her back, beats her borderline to death, and then cuts her head off.
I was saying, he doesn't just cut, made it sound like he just walked up and cut her head off. Nope.
Yeah.
She gets pummeled.
Yeah, which is a weird one, because it's kind of a cool story. That's why I have to cover it later. Like, Celestine's one of the best fighters in all the Imperium, and Karn the Betrayer is just like...
trucks her. But Karn's also Karn, so...
Yeah, Karn's Karn. Yeah, so
we will cover that. Karn's a badass.
Yeah, Karn can fight. So Celestine, though, is not... they write this in a cool way.
I'm losing my fanboy on this because it's cool, but it's not cool. Because it's straight up old school.
This is 80s movies.
She has to go. She loses her memory, amnesia style, and then she has to go. Then she has to go to the dojo.
Yeah. Celestine awakens in the warp. Don't tell us where, but just somewhere in the warp.
In a dojo.
Yeah, with no memory. And she does, to Brad's point. She finds some spirits who then... like train her, and she starts gaining her memories back.
I feel like you're not going to say dojo. She goes to a spirit dojo, has an 80s montage video, which I'm assuming Survivor plays, and then she gets all of her powers and her memories back after training with the spirit mojo in the dojo.
And then rejoins the Materium.
Yep.
At which point she gets killed again and reawakens in the warp. Now, the reason this sounds stupid, but the reason I actually do like this is that this is probably what ends up happening every time she dies and gets resurrected. It's just the warp time and the warp moves differently, because there are stories of her being killed and then getting right
back up.
And so, but what happens is she may have just been in the warp for like 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just
every time she does an 80s montage video,
mm-hmm.
But she does do that. Like every time she's like, you're the best, the best, the best.
And I like this from a writing standpoint, because it at least gives you an idea of like, so how does this work?
But also, that's the thing, is how the warp works. she rises back like a demon. This is how demons come back. And but by the way, it's not because, again, demons are using Immaterium. The Immaterium is not bad. The Imperium is just power.
Now, there is another key member of kind of the sisters' lore who I'm going to admit to now and tell you we're going to cover later, and that's Ephriel Stern.
Oh, I'm sorry. You mean the one that stole the Eldar model?
Yeah. The Ephriel Stern I like a lot, but I'll be honest, telling her story without some of the Yunari stuff will be really hard.
I've got a pretty big frowny face on right now.
Brad does not like Ephriel Stern.
Nope.
But I do.
So, also, no new Eldar models in 20 freaking years at this point. And then we get a new Eldar model, and it's a sister's crony.
Yeah.
It's a henchman. Screw you.
All right. I'm less mad about that. But that being said, Ephriel Stern, I'm just going to call it out right now. We're not going to cover her here. And it's because as we cover other parts of the storyline, especially when we spend some time talking about like the Yunari timeline, she's really helpful for that.
So. She does do some badass shit in that.
So with that, you know, we're going to kind of call this. This one's gone a little bit longer than I thought it would go. So,
Kaganel.
Yeah, we're going to finish this up. Next week, we're going to jump into Drukhari, where it's GW effectively went, hey, remember dark elves from fantasy or any fantasy? What if we made them extra messed up?
How about we make them horrible and awesome?
Yeah. This next one's going to be three casts. I'm warning you now because we're doing Eldar and you're about to hear Brad and I fanboy.
Also, the first cast is going to be me waiting for the second and third cast.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. So until next week, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.